I personally am seeing more voluntary Latinos seeking therapy, counseling, voluntarily coming in to seek some help. For some of us counselors out there, learning the language and speaking the language really does help. There's not many Latino therapists out there who speak Spanish.
This is Mind Salad, a program of diverse weekly discussions about mental wellness with a rotating panel of licensed professional mental health counselors on a variety of mental health topics with guests and information to help you sort through life struggles. The information that is provided on this program is for informational purposes only and is not meant to treat or diagnose any mental health condition or be a substitute for therapy. This week, your host is Carlos Villafan from Mind Renewal Behavioral Health Services.
You are listening to another episode of Mind Salad, where we have weekly discussions on mental wellness. My name is Carlos Villafan. I am from Mind Renewal Behavioral Health Services. Today's show is another personal one for me. Today, I want to talk about the Latino culture or the Latinx culture, and really as it relates to, as the culture relates to mental health and really seeking mental health treatment. It's a personal topic for me, obviously. I am a Latino male. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and if you've listened to previous shows, I'm a first-generation Mexican-American. Family, if you're interested in those previous shows, go check it out on Podbeam. We have all the Mind Salad shows there, previous shows of mine where I talk about grief and loss and trauma, just my experience in general. Go back to the very beginning and listen to our first show where all four of us hosts talked about Mind Salad and what we were going to bring to the show. Latinos, we're a different breed. We're a different culture. But I got some statistics for you. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, this is a 2015 stat, Latinos make up approximately 56 million of the total U.S. population. It makes Latinos the largest ethnic or racial minority in the country. The Latino population is projected to grow, and their projection is to about 120 million by the year 2060. So folks, we're growing, and it's a beautiful thing. As a counselor going through school, we take multicultural counseling courses. Now, as I collected my notes and my thoughts for today's show, I thought about how broad this topic could be and all the different themes that I will talk about in today's show. I could really just take off with and create shows on their own. And I thought about, who's the target audience for today's show? Is it for the Latino potential client out there, the Latino population interested in counseling, curious about counseling, or is it for therapists, fellow therapists, colleagues of mine, curious about treating the Latino population? The Latino population, we come with our, like all cultures, we come with our quirks, our belief systems, our morals, our heritage, our cultures. And so understanding that, I think, is key. On the other side, for my Latino population, understanding what counseling is about, I think, is another important aspect of what I wanted to convey, at least in today's show. But I'm going to talk more about the culture itself and maybe some of the beliefs, some of the heritage, I guess, that Latinos bring in, and what we may come across in a counseling relationship. Working with clients in general, just a new person across the couch from me, it is an interesting experience in and of itself. Add to that a difference in cultural background that's different from my own. I mean, that's just a learning experience completely that is unique. We want to convey a sense of safety. We want to project comfort. We want that client across the couch from us to feel open and safe with me, who may look different from them on the other side of things. Just having somebody that's a different cultural background than you is a really challenging experience. So, I mean, how are we as counselors supposed to learn, I guess, how to work with different cultures? If if we're reduced to a class or a chapter in a textbook while we're going through graduate school. I mean, it's impossible. So personal experience and having that life, that real world experience, I think is going to be the most important for us as counselors. Latinos, we're not all Mexicans. I hear too much out there where folks from other cultural backgrounds will refer to Latinos as just Mexicans and or Spanish. We're not all Spanish. Spanish people are from Spain. Mexican people obviously are from Mexico, but Latinos come from Latin America, Latino America, from Mexico, from Central America, from South America, and believe it or not, Europe. Obviously, that's where Spain is, and that's where the Spanish language originates from, in Spain, but also in France, Portugal, Andorra, Gibraltar, some sections of those populations that speak Spanish, Asia, the Philippines. There's some aspects of the Spanish language in that country as well. Africa, Equatorial Guinea, and the Equato-Guinean Spanish. It's a different dialect, but it's Spanish. Spanish, folks, is the world's second most spoken native language after Mandarin Chinese, and the world's fourth most spoken language overall after English, Mandarin Chinese, and Hindi, believe it or not. Coming back full circle to the Latino culture and kind of our experience, a Latino experience in this country. I want to share a personal story about myself and something that I experienced personally, and maybe you can relate to it. I grew up again in a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood in Los Angeles, California, and we all looked the same. We thought the same. We were very like-minded. And it was comfortable. It was safe. And I got to tell you that whenever somebody that didn't look like us walked through our neighborhood, we were on guard, I guess, if you will. We minded our P's and Q's. We kind of telephoned each other. Hey, you know, there's this guy walking down the street. Who do you know him? Come out, check it out. What's going on? And we were very much protective of our community, of our neighborhood, of our barrio. And as we grew up, the schools, the local schools, high school, were overcrowded. And so what our school district did was they bused us inner city kids out to the valley, outside of our comfort zone, outside of our area of safety. And truthfully, it was my first exposure to people who didn't look like me, didn't sound like me, didn't maybe think like me, and we all had to make it work. So we were bussed out of the city, really due to overcrowdedness. And it was there, unfortunately, I guess, that I realized the degree of bias that was developed in my personality, in my way of thinking, in my way of seeing the world. After all, for all those years, all that I was exposed to was like-minded folks. And now there's Caucasians and Armenians, and I mean, you name it, just a wide array of diversity in this high school, which I loved, by the way. It was a great experience for me. But we had to learn to interact with others. We had to learn to interact with others who didn't look like us. Now, I use the word bias, but maybe that could be interchanged with that other word that people don't like to use. That word that starts with an R, racism. And as much as that word conjures up a negative connotation, maybe that's what it was. And we have to accept maybe that that's what it was. But for the sake of this program, we'll use the word bias, okay? I don't want to offend anybody. Some of the themes and topics that I'm going to talk about, I don't know, might trigger somebody. We'll use the word bias. Prior to getting bussed out of our inner city, our culture, the Latino culture, we tended to kind of stick to ourselves. There were issues. We kept it in-house. We don't take our problems outside of the household. And when it did get outside of the household, it was accepted, I suppose, for our community to help our parents raise us. We were pretty free. There was a different level of freedom for us growing up. And yeah, there was some rambunctiousness and we got into some trouble. You know, that saying, it takes a village to raise a child, was in full effect. Our neighbors would come out, and if they saw us doing wrong, they would discipline us. How would they discipline us? They would scream and yell at us, but also, you know, some corporal punishment that I think was so much more accepted back then, before the written thought of child abuse laws, I suppose. They came out kind of throughout the 90s throughout the 80s in different degrees. We were taught to kind of help each other out, right? If we look the same, help that person out. After all, that's who was in our neighborhoods. It was instilled religiously by faith and by cultural heritage that we help each other out. It takes a village. But then we come into the thoughts and ideas about us against the world. There's a saying in Spanish, ni de aquí ni de allá, not from here nor from there. So Mexican Americans, Chicanos in America, we felt a little left out. We weren't ever American enough. But then, of course, when we take trips to the motherland, wherever that may be, Mexico, in my example, we definitely weren't Mexican enough. So when we get back home, we just kind of recycle that thinking that it was really us against the world. Our parents, you know, who were born and raised in their countries. My parents were born in Mexico, Guadalajara, Jalisco, and Michoacán, Mexico. And they came with their own realities of the world and methods of disciplining and raising children and work ethic and religion. And as a child growing up a Latino household, you know, we heard those things that they don't understand us. They don't understand our traditions. They don't understand our cultural values. And so, again, that widens that mentality of us against the world. That widens the thought of helping each other out and sticking to ourselves because they don't understand us. Then the next level that hits Latino populations is systematic or systemic mistrust. We are all labeled as Mexican again. We are illegal. We are so many other things that are unfair, ignorant, and otherwise. We're getting this from one end, we're getting that from the other end, from our families. And so we grow up a very confused population. Folks, if you're just tuning in, my name is Carlos Villafan, and you're listening to Mind Salad, where we have weekly discussions on mental wellness. Today, I'm talking about the Latino culture, some of the beliefs and value systems that the Latinos bring into mental health and therapy, and a lack of seeking treatment, or hopefully to seek treatment. I want to talk a little bit about religion influence or religious influence to the Latino population. I found another study prior to the show that said that 83% of Hispanics claim a religious affiliation, and that's slightly higher than the general public, which is about 80%. I'm not sure of the year of this particular study, and that's not really important. I don't want to get stuck with the numbers and the details of things, but among Latinos, most Latinos are Catholic. More than 3 in 5 say that they are Catholic. That's about 62%. 1 in 5, or 19%, Latino adults say they are Protestant, and 14% say they are unaffiliated with any specific religion. So religion has a big part in the Latino culture and how we raise our children. One of the things that I've found as a Latino Spanish-speaking mental health counselor is, how do we bridge those gaps? How do we bridge faith and science or pseudoscience, if you want to call it that. But to me, science, I think the religious aspect of things really influences Latinos, and there's nothing wrong with that. Faith is enormous. Faith is huge. In my opinion, faith keeps us grounded and centered and focused on positive moral goals. But we have to help this population accept alternative things. In my experience, personally, as a Latino man in my profession and learning different avenues and aspects of this profession, accepting alternative medicines or alternative methods such as meditation and mantras and, you know, yoga and, you know, things like that, energy psychologies. There's so much out there that have existed for so long that for the Latino population, we really haven't heard of, because it kind of goes against, you know, the good book. It kind of goes against what we were taught in Sunday school. But helping somebody accept or understand a different point of view and exposing this population to alternative thinking, alternative methods of treatments, I think is critical. Growing up Latino, we stick to each other. We utilize our immediate family. Extended family, our tios, our tias, abuelos, abuelitas, but again, the community, our neighbors, if we're close to them, we kind of, we lean on them. Then, of course, our priests, we go to confession, we get some moral guidance from them and our pastors. We don't tend to go outside of those, that box. And so for a Latino therapist, learning what I've learned and experiencing what I've experienced, we want to normalize that for these folks. So religion is a big influencer for the Latino population. I want to talk about another topic that is important to the Latino population that comes out really in almost everybody that I've talked to, whether personally or professionally. But it's this concept of la chancla. Now, look, this topic, la chancla, I can do a show by itself on this topic of la chancla. Well, what is the la chancla? La chancla literally means the flip-flop. More broader, it's about punishment and discipline and really corporal punishment. That's what the chancla is. That's what the chancla culture is. It's about corporal punishment and how historically Hispanics discipline their children. I heard an interesting story about the origins of la chancla and that form of corporal punishment and how it came out of herding cattle and using whips or sticks or, you know, switches, I guess, out there to herd cattle and keep them in line and keep them where we want them to be. And so that kind of those campesinos, maybe mostly uneducated populations, they just did what they knew and they used the stick or the whip or the chancla as it evolved to keep children in line and in order. What does la chancla and the chancla culture really truly do? It teaches shame and guilt, and it really instills overall fear. Now, we use the word chancletazos or cinturazos, and that's really one and the same. Chancla, chancletazos is using the chancla, the flip-flop, which doesn't hurt as much. Cinturazos is using the belt, but it's all the same. It's about instilling fear, thinking that they're respecting my authority. And you know what? You do that enough, and all you have to do is hold the chancla up. You don't even have to use it. Just hold the chancla up, and that's enough. And in psychology, we call that operant conditioning. And if you're familiar with that term, that, you know, you may be familiar with Pavlov's dogs and ringing a bell to produce saliva. It's basically the same thing. You raise up the chancla, and you relax, and you don't misbehave. But there's a difference between discipline and corporal punishment. Discipline is a positive method of teaching a child self-control, to teach a child confidence and responsibility. Punishment focuses on past misbehaviors and really doesn't offer much for the child and their behaviors in the future. Punishment may be physical, of course, or psychological, emotional. And according to the American Psychological Association, corporal punishment remains, unfortunately, a widely disciplined technique in really most American families, never mind the Latino population. Again, the negative aspect of that chancla culture is that it really truly hurts children. The chancla is a symbol of punishment and physical damage. Again, not only physically, but it produces really long-term emotional harm. So keep that in mind. If you're treating Latinos or Hispanics out there, there's some long-term damages being done just with the chancla. We haven't even touched on anything else, really. The racism, the systemic violence, etc. But la chancla also creates a cycle of violence. It kind of teaches that to our kids. Once a parent starts and justifies the use of violence, how can he or she expect their child to stay away from solving problems and conflicts through violence? Violence feeds itself. Once the cycle of violence begins, man, it's hard to end it. It can be done. It can end, and we can put a stop to that, but it's super difficult to just stop it. And lastly, it's ineffective. Fear isn't good behavior. It's just self-preservation. Again, in my previous shows, I used the term fight or flight. Fight or flight is about self-preservation and surviving. To raise strong, independent, and well-behaved kids, us parents, Latino parents, we got to learn ways to motivate children to behave for intrinsic reasons, things that come from within. That teaches valuable skills that last a lifetime. That's much more effective than scaring them with the chancla or the belt or a switch or an extension cord or fill in the blank. Another topic I want to talk about is the idea of tú estás loco. What does that mean? That means you're crazy, literally. You're crazy. I don't know if with Hispanic culture we mean that literally, but we use that term very, very loosely. And that imprints in a child, in a child's brain, and really in any human being, but it imprints in our children that crazy is not good. Again, there's some negative connotations to that. Something is wrong with you. But you know, unfortunately, in the Latino culture, historically, maybe because of the religious influences, but mental illness is not quite understood. Depression, anxiety, you know, those things are just stress. You're just under stress. Go relax. Think it out of your system. And so we don't deal with this stuff. And the more this quote unquote stress continues or lingers, eventually we start hearing that term, tú estás loco o loca. You're crazy. And so the cycle continues, that negative cycle continues. So what we want to do is normalize counseling and really curtail the stigma, especially in this population. One of the other hosts had a show on the African American population and their views on counseling, and that was a very interesting show. My colleague Yakita Renfro. Counseling does not equate to being crazy, folks. Not at all. People utilize counseling services for various reasons. For instance, I would tell somebody that's coming in to see me and use the analogy of going to see a doctor. If you have a physical ailment, something hurts, something is not right in your body, you go see a doctor. If you're not feeling well inside, your thinking, your emotions, go find a counselor. The doctors are experts in their fields, I would hope, and can treat your physical symptoms. And mental health counselors can help you heal from the inside. And honestly, sometimes healing from the inside will take care of a lot of the physical symptoms. It's normal, folks, to feel overwhelmed. Mis Latinos, es normal de sentirnos estresados. It's normal to feel stressed out. It's okay. We're only human. Somos humanos. Go get the help that we need. Language barriers are another, you know, obvious barrier to seeking mental health counseling. Spanish speakers, we don't understand the therapy process. Latino speakers, primarily Spanish speakers, they don't understand. They go, they take their child or to see a counselor, and they don't know what's going on. They feel left out. They feel uninvolved. What are you doing to my child? You're Americanizing him or her. You're making him or her lose their culture. Obviously, that's not true. They just don't understand the process. They don't understand what we're doing. Educating potential clients about the counseling profession is critical. Letting them know that my job is not to judge, but to listen and to work with them to alleviate their stress in their natural ecology, not in mine. Explaining to them that I'm there to help, that they decide the process in counseling. They drive the bus, as I like to say. They push the direction of counseling, not me. In school, they teach us not to self-disclose too much, but self-disclosure within reason with this population really does help. School teaches us that you don't have to be a addict to treat an addict or a Latino to treat a Latino, but you know what? It does help. It really does. It helps put that other person at ease. It's not necessary, but it does help put that other person at ease, that we look the same, that we sound the same. Some positive trends I wanted to mention, that I personally am seeing more voluntary Latinos seeking therapy or counseling. And by voluntary, I mean on their own, not court ordered or through child protective services or anything like that. Just voluntarily coming in to seek some help. For some of us counselors out there, learning the language and speaking the language really does help. There's not many Latino therapists out there who speak Spanish. There might be some Latinos out there, but they don't speak Spanish. Male Latino therapists who speak Spanish, like myself, we're a rare breed. But it really does help, okay? And if you're not comfortable as a therapist, as a clinician, refer them out. Mi gente Latina, there are people out there who can help you. Que hablan español. Folks, that was a pretty broad topic there. And I only had 30 minutes to touch on the Latino population. In future shows, I hope to bring in some of my colleagues and therapists that also speak Spanish over there at Mind Renewal Behavioral Health Services. And they can give you their perspectives on their thoughts on counseling the Latino population. But folks, that's it for me today. I want to thank you for listening. If you're interested in more of this topic, feel free to reach us over there at Mind Renewal at 719-465-2582. Find us on the web at www.mindrenewalbhs.org, or hit us up on the Facebook page and Instagram page. It's a lot of cool information there. Thank you for listening today, folks. And I want to leave you with my final thought as always. And that is, if you correct your mind, the rest of your life will fall into place. Thanks again. God bless. Till next time.
You've been listening to Mind Salad, a discussion of mental wellness issues and topics with a rotating panel of mental health providers. Heard every Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on KPPF, and be sure to listen to the podcast on Podbean. Mind Renewal is a minority and veteran-owned practice with a passion for serving the underrepresented and to remove the stigma attached to seeking and receiving quality behavioral health services. Mind Renewal has a diverse group of clinicians with assorted specialties to meet your individual needs. Their goal is to empower clients to improve their quality of life and help connect them to resources that sustain their positive growth. If you're considering help, call Mind Renewal 719-465-2582.